Okay, so this is April 17, 2012, Hilo, Hawaii, Bhagavatam 117.5. Oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless? By your dress, you pose yourself to be a godly man or a king, but by your deeds, you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. So it's very interesting. Naradeva Sivashena. Naradeva, the god among the humans, Vaishena, in your dress, in your clothes, Natavat, like Nataraj, a dancer, you're like a dancer, Karm Anidvija, but you have the dress of somebody, like a dancing actor, but actually by your actions, you're not a twice born. So reading this verse reminded me of an advertisement I used to see on television when I was a child, where this guy was selling aspirin or something, and he says, I'm not a doctor, but I play a doctor on television, and I'm telling you to buy this painkiller. So it's something like that. You know, I'm not actually a king, I'm not actually a wise man, but I'm dressed like one, just like an actor. So this is the world of falsity, the world of names, where people pretend to be something that they're not, where people take a position to get status and power without actually having the qualifications, without actually being willing to take the real responsibility. And of course, this is especially prevalent now, when people are still exhibiting their tendencies, their varnashram tendencies, but they're not actually following the rules, they're not following the principles. They're not really who they say they are. And here we see what the real king is supposed to do, what the real leader is supposed to do, that strength is for protection. Balad. Balad is strength. For the abalam, for the ones who are weak. So although you have a lot of strength, we have balad damsya balan bali. You're supposed to use your strength to protect the weak, but instead you're using your strength to harass the weak. So the leaders of society, they're supposed to use whatever powers they have. The brahmanas have the power of intellect and learning, the kshatriyas have the power of military strength and the power of the tax money they've collected. The vaishyas have the power of the money they've generated from the natural resources. The shudras have the power of creating the services and the entertainment and the goods of the society. So whatever strength one has is meant to do good for others. It's not meant to exploit others. One's not meant to use one's strength to take advantage of those who have less strength. One is supposed to be caring and compassionate and sacrificing. So, of course, even today, there's certainly an understanding that a person should be caring and compassionate and sacrificing and non-exploitive. Somebody was saying to me today that the schools don't teach values and morality. That values and morality are surgically removed from education. And I said, well, I don't agree with that at all. That in most educational institutions, they make quite an attempt to teach that one should be caring and sacrificing for one another, that one should use one's talents and one's strengths and one's power to help those who are weaker or less fortunate than oneself. So that concept is still there. But people don't know how to do it. First of all, if they really want to do it, they don't quite know how. And second of all, they're so overwhelmed with the modes of passion and ignorance that they're not able to maintain that. So therefore, one has to be a dvija. Ja means birth, dvi means two. And dvija refers to birds, because birds are first, the mother lays the egg, and then the bird comes out of the egg. So two births, one birth by egg laying and one birth by hatching. But it also refers to two births, as Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, one birth by parental conjugation and another birth of cultural rejuvenation by spiritual initiation from the bona fide acharya. So particularly you see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, which Srila Prabhupada wrote completely himself, and although it went through some editing, I think the editing there was tended to be a little lighter than in the later books. So you really see a lot of Srila Prabhupada's own poetry. One birth by parental conjugation, another birth of cultural rejuvenation. That's what we call parallel construction, and it's quite poetic. There's some assonance and consonance there. By spiritual initiation, you have three shuns: conjugation, rejuvenation, initiation, and you have the parallel construction. Parental conjugation, cultural rejuvenation, spiritual initiation. And you'll notice you have also the same number of syllables. So we see that the devotee is a poet. But as far as the content, the idea is that in order to actually be compassionate, in order to be caring, in order to be sacrificing, one has to have the guidance of a guru. My father used to say to me a lot that the way to hell is paved with good intentions. So I have no doubt that the majority of people in human society today, probably the vast majority of people, want to be a good person. Now, some people actively want to be evil, but most people want to be a good person. They want to be caring for others. They want to use their talents and abilities and their strengths to serve others. But they don't know how. They don't know what real service is. They just don't know how to go about it. As Prabhupada would say, they have a poor fund of knowledge. And we've seen in our own lives how many times we've thought, you know, I want to help somebody, I want to do good for others, but what we do just doesn't work out right. Sometimes the good you try to do for others ends up causing more harm and just entangles them in you, and then we back up and say, well, I don't think I'm going to try to help anybody anymore. I mean, I had an incident in my life where I've had many, but one I'm thinking of in particular where I really took a lot of trouble to try to help somebody. And pretty much all this person could do was complain about the way I was helping him. You know, it was just, why are you helping me this way? Why are you helping me that way? This isn't what I really wanted. If I had known you were going to help me in that way, I wouldn't have agreed from the beginning to let you help me, and so forth and so on. And this is quite typical, that we give ourselves, we sacrifice, we spend our time, we spend our energy, and the other person may not be grateful, or it may not even be useful for them. And we may buy somebody a gift with great trouble, and the person just says, I'm really sorry, this isn't something that I need or want, it's not something I can use, and, you know, so we don't really know what to do. We really don't know how to help others. People are trying in so many ways. You know, I think about there's these organizations that if somebody, especially a child, if they have some terminal disease, that people try to fulfill their last wish. I want to go to Disneyland, or I want to go in a submarine, or I want to meet the Queen of England, or something like that. People will donate money to give them their last wish, and thinking, well, now I'm really doing good for others. Or, of course, giving food to starving people, and medical care to people in need, and all of that may be very good and wonderful, but it may not really be helping people on the ultimate platform. It may be necessary, but not sufficient. And therefore, the people that we help, they may still be suffering. So that's one problem one has if they're not actually a dvija. They may want to do good and attempt to do good, and the good may not be good. And another problem one will have if one doesn't have the guidance of guru is that one may not actually be able even to be a good person. We're very divided. So we talk about, you know, the higher self. That Arjuna asked this question, why is it that sometimes I feel like I'm forced to engage in sinful activities, even against my will? So conditioned souls have this problem over and over again. We'll make a determination, okay, I'm not going to get angry at my children. Even when my children misbehave, I'm going to be able to keep my cool and keep my composure. And then a child does something that's really aggravating and the parent just flies into a rage and starts yelling at them. So this happens. You know, we decide this is the kind of person I want to be, this is the way I want to act, this is the way I want to think, the way I want to behave. I want to treat others with kindness and compassion. And we end up doing something different, even though we don't want to. And that is because without a guru, we don't even know how to come to our real self. We don't know how to access our actual good qualities. One can try through so many psychological means or behavioral means to change one's character, and those things have value. It's not that they don't have value, they do have value. But they have limited value because they don't get at the root. If you have some disease, then taking some painkiller may have some value. Taking something to reduce the symptoms and be more comfortable may have some value. But you're not really eradicating the disease. Prabhupada would compare it to blowing on a boil. You have to excise the boil. You have to cut the boil, which is in itself a painful thing to do, but ultimately relieves the pain. And again, taking care of symptoms is not a bad thing. But the good doctor does both. The good doctor both eliminates the cause of the symptom and may also be temporarily dealing with the symptoms. I mean, Prabhupada said things like psychology when used in the service of the Lord are also Harikirtan. So without denying them, we'd have to say they're insufficient. Because no matter what self-help program you go to, no matter what course you take, no matter what kind of training you have, no matter what psychological book you read, there still will come times when you act in a way that's not the person you really want to be. There will be some point, and we've talked about this before, that basically that point is the point of fear and attachment. That if I'm dealing with something that I'm really attached to, someone or something or some situation that I'm strongly attached to, and I have some real fear related to my attachment, then attachment, fear, and anger, Krishna talks about, and one will lose one's good qualities, one will lose one's intelligence, and one will fall into the material pool. So only a guru can give us instructions how to pull out the root of material attachment. Material attachment doesn't just mean I like my car, you know, I like my new shoes, I want to have some money. One person asked me the other day, can I be a devotee if I want a car? But that's what we think about material attachments. But really material attachments is that I want to be able to be the owner and the controller and the enjoyer separate from Krishna. But I'm very scared. So just like a young child. So young children often want to be independent of their parents because their parents tell them what to do. You have to go to school. You have to brush your teeth. You have to be nice to your brothers and sisters. And so they're thinking, let me just get away and do whatever I want. But at the same time, it's scary because you know that without the parents' protection, how are you going to survive? How are you going to eat even? How are you going to have a place to stay? So I remember when I was quite young, I don't know, 9 or 10, I wrote a note to my parents, I'm running away from home, but don't call the police because I'll be back. So the rebellious soul is saying, Krishna, I want to get out from under your control. I want to do things my way. I want to be the enjoyer. But at the same time, that's a very scary position to be in because I'm not the controller. I don't have the power to control the material energy. I don't have the power to supply all of my own needs. I don't have the power to take care of myself. I really become like a lost child who's just full of bluster and bragging that I'm some big person taking care of myself. And as soon as it becomes obvious that I'm insufficient, then I become afraid and I become angry. And in that fear and anger, one will give up one's good qualities. So I've talked about this many times before, how, you know, one will be honest as long as it suits our purposes. So I've asked many rooms full of people, would everyone here call themselves an honest person? And people are hesitant to raise their hands and say they're an honest person. because everyone knows, well, okay, I'm basically honest, but not always. And if we examine, you know, when am I not honest, it's going to be when we're afraid. When I'm afraid, well, if I tell the truth, then maybe, you know, I'll get into some kind of trouble, or I won't get what I need, or something like that. And the same with taking good care of others and treating others kindly and sacrificing for others, which is the main point here. That to give protection to the weak, to use my strengths and my talents to benefit myself and others rather than to harm others. So we'll benefit others as long as, you know, there's not too much price for ourselves. But as soon as there's a lot of self-sacrifice, then I'm a little hesitant to use what I have for others, because I'm thinking, well, then there won't be enough for me. What about me? I've got to take care of me. Who else is going to take care of me? So this is all the fears of somebody who thinks they're separated from their parents and they're on their own. So the guru deals with this by helping us to reconnect with Krishna, by showing us that we've never been separate from Krishna, that Krishna's always been taking care of us. We've never been abandoned. We're like a child who, you know, so-called runs away from home, but the parent is always watching them and always aware of what they're doing and always making sure, even in their state of rebellion, that they're cared for. Just like even an ordinary parent, even if the child is saying, you know, well, I'm not going to listen to you anymore, I don't care about you, the parent still makes sure that the child gets food and everything that they need. So therefore, if we really want to be the kind of person that we say we want to be, if we want to be a person of integrity, if we want to have an integrated life, I mean, here the personality of Kali is not integrated. He has the vesh of a Naradeva. He has the dress, like an actor, Natavat, so just like an actor. He's dressed up like a powerful person, and he's trying to act like a powerful person. But actually, his actions are that of a coward. His actions are that of a low-class person. So we're saying, I want to be a devotee of Krishna. I want to be a saintly person. I want to be full of good qualities. I want to be the kind of person that at the end of the day, at the end of my life, at every moment of my life, I can feel happy with. I recently gave a talk to the public in Croatia, and the title was, How to Like Yourself. And we got a packed hall. And the devotees told me, we don't usually get so many people for a program. And meditating on it, I thought about how many of us just don't like ourselves. That we look at how we behave, and we look at what we do, and we think, you know, I wish that I was what I would like to be. I wish I was what I appear to be. So if we really want that, we have to accept guidance from a guru. And not just guidance, but initiation. So Rupa Goswami says that the three most important items of devotional service are finding a guru, surrendering to a guru, taking initiation from a guru. So initiation means that one has made a commitment, that one is saying, I'm actually going to follow. Because so many times we may ask advice from somebody, but we'll take it or leave it. Oh, what do you think? And then we think about it, and we consider it, maybe we ask 10 different people, and we sort out all the different opinions. But actually to say to the guru, okay, I'm going to accept your instruction. So of course the Diksha Guru has to give the Diksha mantras, the mantras of the Sampradaya. And Prabhupada says Diksha means Divya Gyan, divine knowledge. So the divine knowledge is there in the mantras. The idea is that by chanting the mantras under the general instructions of the guru, that one will achieve transcendental knowledge. And with this transcendental knowledge, one will get clear vision. With clear vision, one will see the root of one's own anarthas, one will see how to deal with those anarthas, one will understand how to behave in various situations, one will see the truth. And of course, there's also the Shiksha Guru. So sometimes the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru are the same, but the Shiksha Guru is someone who's giving a more specific and ongoing instruction. So the Diksha Guru may only give the Diksha Mantras and the instructions for chanting the Diksha Mantras, but the Shiksha Guru is giving full instructions, live like this, live like this. This is the proper way to behave. Not that the Shiksha Guru micromanages your life. Sometimes people think, you know, I have to ask my guru, should I buy the tan shoes or the green shoes? So that's not pleasing. Even an ordinary parent, they don't want their 20-year-old child to be dependent on them like that. That's not what we mean by giving shiksha. But giving shiksha is, how do I actually become surrendered to Krishna? How do I root out this core of envy, which has caused me to claim myself independent and separate from Krishna, which has then caused all of the problems that I have as far as my behavior to others? And then at that point, by really following the Shastra, really following the Guru, not just externally, not just as a fashion, not as just something so you can say, well, I have a spiritual name, and yes, I have my Guru, but really deeply taking in the instructions of a Guru like Srila Prabhupada, then one can actually give protection to others and not exploit them. Because at that point, one's really connected with Krishna, and being connected with Krishna, one no longer needs anything, as Krishna says, from any other living being. One has no need to depend on any other living being. And therefore, one is able just to give. And that can't be done artificially, just through psychology or just through some adjustment. It has to be done on a deep level. And that deep level can only happen when one follows the guidance from Krishna through his representatives. So here the real king is saying to Kali, you know, you're opposing the principles of the twice born by your actions, although you're dressed like a twice born. So we want to be the kind of people who are not just dressed like someone who's initiated and someone who's surrendered, but actually to be surrendered. And to be surrendered doesn't mean blind following. Prabhupada says blind following is condemned. It means intelligent questions, intelligent following, mature assimilation of the knowledge, and a deep dedication to the instructions of the Guru. And if this is done, then the whole world can be wonderful. If the Brahmins, if the people were intellectual, if they're using their intellectual powers for the good of the people, if they're distributing knowledge to uplift the people, if the government is actually using their strength to take care of the people rather than to exploit them, if the business people and the farmers, if they're protecting the earth and protecting the land, and if those who are entertainers and craftsperson and in the service sector, if they're producing things of beauty and harmony in cooperation with the earth to glorify Krishna, then even in material life, everything would be very wonderful. This is a very deep verse about the difference between appearance and reality. To be something that's authentic. Now, we often want others to be authentic, but this is a verse about becoming ourselves authentic and creating a society where at least the leaders are not just, what Prabhupada would say, showbottle. Showbottle is, you know, Prabhupada used to run a pharmaceutical company. So what they would do, instead of putting real medicines in the shop window, they just take a bottle and fill it up with some colored liquid and put a sticker on it. So it looks like the medicine, but it's actually just a show bottle. You know, sometimes you'll see today where they just put empty boxes out for display so people won't steal the stuff that's inside. So we don't want to be just an empty box or a show bottle. We want to be deep and we want to be real. And we may have to become deep and real step by step. We may not to be able to live up to all of our ideals in the next 5 minutes. But at least to head in that direction by really imbibing the instructions that we have, not taking them as just something superficial or something that I'll do tomorrow. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
voted on today. If anyone has any questions or comments, please go ahead.
This is Maharani Devi Dasi.
Oh, hi, Maharani.
I'm so glad you finally... I'm so glad you finally made it to class, and it was so good to hear from you today.
Hi, Krishna.
Hi, Krishna. I just wanted to ask about this class you gave, How to Like Yourself.
Mm.
Do you happen to have an outline or a seminar of that online somewhere? I think, you know... We have the Bhakti Yoga Club at the University of Hawaii. I think that would be a great topic.
Well, I did put together a PowerPoint. Because the class was being translated into Croatian, I don't have much text on the PowerPoint because it's not really helpful to put English text where people can't read English. But my basic point was about understanding the true self, understanding that we're a soul. And as a soul, we have most of the qualities of God in a minute degree. And so if we really want to like ourselves, we have to find the real self, because we're never going to really like the false self. It's not very likable.
Thank you. You're a little bit broken to understand you, but I'll try to listen again at the recording. But I got the basics. Understand your true self, and you have the same qualities of God, and like that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
This is your opportunity, Bruce. Anything you'd like to ask Mother Ursula? You know, you see the, like these fanatical groups, either political or religious, you know, like the Nazis or not, are like Islamic fundamentalists. They really believe in what they're doing. My question in relationship to what you were saying, you know, people want to do good, but they just don't know how. They don't have the proper guidance. For those who are fanatics, but they really believe what they're doing is for the best, do they get any benefit for that state of mind, even if they're misled?
Well, Prabhupada tells a story of one time when he saw one of his neighbors, and the mother was hitting her child. So he asked somebody to find out what was going on. Why is she hitting her child? And she found out that this woman's other child, her other son, had typhoid. And in typhoid, he wasn't supposed to have any solid food, only liquid food. And he was feeling hungry. You know, his stomach was aching because he wasn't getting that much food. And so he asked his little brother, please get me a pakora. And the little brother, out of love for his older brother, out of affection for his older brother, had brought a pakora. But the older brother, having eaten this pakora, was now very, very sick. So Prabhupada uses this as an example of what my father used to say, that the way to hell is paved with good intentions. And good intentions aren't enough. You really have to know how to exhibit your good intentions. And that's required of every human being. Just like a human being has to know the laws of their own country. You know, you can't, Prabhupada would use this all the time, that ignorance of the law is no excuse. If you're driving on the wrong side of the road, just like now here in London, and people drive on the other side to America, and you can drive from London to Europe over the channel, when you get out on the other side, you have to switch lanes. So if somebody says, well, I didn't know, and they get in an accident and they kill somebody, you can't say, well, I didn't know. It's your duty to find out. So just being firmly convinced, you know, there's faith in the different modes of nature, just being firmly convinced that you're right and thinking you're going to do something wonderful. Therefore, that the whole issue here is whether or not you're twice born, whether or not you're actually under the care of a guru. Otherwise, in the name of doing good, you may cause havoc.
I was wondering, when you're talking about having a guru and consulting the guru, and we're told so many times, don't bother the guru with, you know, material concerns, and the guru is not supposed to be consulted except on spiritual topics. So maybe you can give us a very, very brief answer of, how do we consider what something is spiritual and what something is material, because they often overlap. So what's a very quick way to know, is this going to be something that I should consult my guru about, or whether I should just try to, come to it as a practical thing?
Well, there's no harm with asking a question as long as you're willing to get the answer that it's inappropriate and then adjust accordingly. So in the beginning, you may ask inappropriate questions because you don't know. And then the guru will say, that's an inappropriate question. There's one letter Prabhupada wrote to one devotee, actually someone that we know, and he said, this question is not the spiritual master's business. So as long as when you get an answer like that, you don't become offended and you don't persist. Now, the problem comes if somebody says, my dear guru, should I wear green socks today? Do they match my tan hat? And the guru says, well, it's not the business of the guru. And then the person says, my guru doesn't like me anymore and keeps asking the same question over and over again. But in the beginning, it's understood that we may not know, and we may ask some questions that are inappropriate or not ask questions that are appropriate. So you can, you can ask the guru what questions are appropriate. What can I ask? And then see also, what does the spiritual master speak about? I mean, if we see about Srila Prabhupada, he was speaking also about material things. It's not that Prabhupada didn't speak about material things. Varnashram is a material thing. How a husband and wife treat each other is a material thing. But he was talking about those things in relationship to Krishna, in relationship to service. So certainly one can ask any question that's related to what the guru is talking about. And there's no harm with asking anything, as long as one has an atmosphere of learning, has a mood of learning and submission, rather than, challenging and being offended. Just like there's one lecture, I think it's in Tokyo, where one of the people in the audience says, Srila Prabhupada, have you ever met the demigods? And Prabhupada said, why are you asking this question? What good will it do if I've met, he said, if I have met Indra and Chandra, how will that benefit you? And if I've not met them, how will you be harmed? Why are you asking this question? What is the purpose of this question? So Prabhupada never answered the question. He just simply said, this is not the kind of question to ask. It's irrelevant.
Mother Ermila?
Yes.
Did you do anything different? You're much more muffled now than you were during class.
Yes. When there's questions, so I can record the question, I switch to the computer mic.
Okay. We're all right. Just got a little bit muffled.
Otherwise,
Mother Ermila.
Otherwise, the questions themselves aren't recorded. If you want, I can switch back and forth.
I think we're okay. We just have to listen intently.
That's all right. I'll switch back and forth to the next one. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to ask the question about the leaders appearing externally as if they're, they have some redeeming qualities. But according to Shastra, particularly in this age, Sva, Vidra, Hostra, Karai, Sansita, Purusha, they're all basically dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. They have no interest in hearing the glories of the Lord's holy name. But sometimes the question comes up, what about voting? I mean, we know they're all unqualified, but sometimes, for example, there may be a candidate who is very strongly against something like abortion. Other than that, they have no redeeming qualities at all. What are your thoughts? Different debates, and I have ambivalent feelings myself about getting involved in voting. What are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, Prabhupada says that the reason that modern wars involve the citizens in general is that because the leaders are voted in, the citizens are also responsible for the decisions of the leaders, and therefore the citizens also have to suffer if there's a war. So I see that the process of voting entails a huge amount of responsibility on the part of the citizens, and some karmic reaction then for the activities of the leaders. In former times, there was certainly voting also for leaders, but the voting was done by highly placed persons who knew the leader very well. So we find in the Bhagavatam that there's often consultation with learned persons who are giving their opinion, maybe not strictly in a vote, but who are giving their opinion about who should be enthroned and who should lead the country. You know, the idea is that rulers, people who have a propensity to rule, should be noted when they're young and actually trained as rulers. You know, ideally even, they come from parents of rulers who, through a scientific process, which we no longer have available to us, that they did in the Garbhadhan Samskar, like Parasuram. You know, although he was born in a Brahmin family, because the payasa was switched, he had the nature of a kshatriya. So they knew how to attract a certain nature of child and then train that child to be a political leader, but at least to train them from a young age. So it wasn't just like an ordinary citizen who just is inspired by their own ideas and thinks, you know, I'll be able to save the world. But I also, you know, democracy is not just about voting. It's about separation of powers and so many things. But it's a hard thing to say. You know, should we ever vote for a particular candidate? I don't think there's anything from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra where we can say absolutely yes or absolutely no. It's one of those things that remains a very time, place, and circumstance, individual detail kind of decision, as far as what I can see from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Okay. Sounds reasonable.
And that as well. We have someone in our state running for some office, I don't remember what exactly, but she has taken the position of pro-choice, and she's supposedly a devotee. And she says her claim to the devotee community is she doesn't want abortion to be regulated by the government. And I'm thinking, you know, if the government does nothing else, at least they can regulate abortion. But also in our verse today, it says, you appear to be strong, and yet you dare to kill within my protection those who are helpless. Who could be more helpless than an unborn baby? Anyway, so, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's hard to say. Like Mother Ermola said, there's no way of saying either way, but, yeah, it's hard to know. Anyway, that's all I have to say on the subject, sorry.
No, that's very true. I mean, certainly if somebody is saying that the government doesn't owe any protection to unborn babies, then they're not qualified to be a government official. You know, here Maharaj Prickett was wanting to protect the animals, the cows and the bulls. But a full-grown cow and bull is a lot more able to protect themselves than a baby in the womb. So this idea that they can be the government and not offer any protection to helpless entities, whether they're in the form of trees or human beings or animals, is absurd. And such a person, as soon as they say such a thing, immediately displays their disqualification to be a leader. Mm-hmm.